Hi, Simon Hill here. Enjoy our podcast? If you'd like to help us keep delivering the sort of quality football chat you want, then you can show your support by making a donation. Big or small, however much you can afford, we appreciate all your help, and every cent will be ploughed back into improving production. Thanks in advance from all of us at Shim, Spider, and so much more.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Corner kick. Celtic couldn't handle Wood on the set piece. It's a brilliant header. And Cahill goes to spectacle. What about that? What about that? Here's Aloisi for a place in the World Cup.
For us.
He's yeah! Gone. Australia got it.
You're with Shim, Spider, and so much more. Take it away, fellas.
Yes, hello again. Good to have you with us for episode 39 of Shim, Spider and so much more. Fair bit has happened since we last met. The Matildas were hammered again. Melbourne victory of parted company with Grant Brebner. And the quadruple dream is over for Manchester City. Not happy, John.
Oh.
Coming up later, we've got Hibs and Socceroos striker Martin Boyle as our special guest. But before that, a big welcome. You've heard one of them already, to my two weekly colleagues, Jelko Kalats and Craig Moore. Good to see you, boys. How are you?
Hello, boys.
Yeah, good.
How you feeling? How you feeling, Simon? Are you disappointed?
Yeah, we'll get into that in London Calling. I want to start today, actually, with a couple of serious pieces of news, really. The first one, the news at the World Game, very iconic in this part of the world, through SBS television, of course, made famous by the late Les Murray and Johnny Warren, to be subsumed into a bigger sporting website at SBS. Kind of feels like the end of an era.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, look, I had a lot to do with SBS in my time back in Australia as well. So it is quite disappointing. And we all know that it was known as the World Game. Everyone who followed football went through SBS at some time or another. Really disappointing. It's sad to see these great footballing platforms disappear.
Yeah, no, very, very, very sad because, you know, I remember as a kid, obviously getting all my football fix, you know, through SBS, through the World Game. Obviously, that, you know, they covered our careers, Spider, as well, when we were up and running. And that was the main outlet. That was the main kind of provider of information of how we were doing when we were overseas. So very, very sad day for football. Unfortunately, you know, it's kind of just another sign of the lack of commitment, I guess, and really our sport, as much as we'd love to see it as a number one sport, it really is second tier in Australia.
It is at the moment. Let's hope that's going to change over the next few weeks. Just one more before we get into hard talk. Maury, to you, it is this weekend, I think it was yesterday, actually on Sunday, 7 years on from the death of Dylan Tombidis. Wow, that's gone quickly. Yeah. I know you're involved with the DT38 Foundation, as I am as well. It was their sort of official Remembrance Day, if you like, the game between Perth and Wellington Phoenix on Sunday.
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, we know obviously the story of Dylan Tombidis, and unfortunately it was a life that was lost far, far too early, you know, but the family and with the, you know, the charity behind it and the awareness that's been raised, I think it's fantastic. 7 years, you're right, Simon, it seems to have gone so quickly. But a great opportunity, a great day, you know, for that awareness, testicular cancer, men not speaking about their issues, not getting to doctors soon enough, quick enough. Hopefully, again, it's another day on the back of, you know, the Dylan Tom Beattie's foundation to recognise and to make sure that everyone is thinking and being able to communicate if there are any problems.
Well said, Maury. All right, let's get into it then in Hard Talk.
Hard Talk.
Hard Talk is brought to you by Streamgate, one of Australia's first live streaming companies operating since 2008. They focus on virtual and hybrid events, broadcasting to unlimited online audiences worldwide by either a secure private stream page or publicly on social media. Live streaming allows social online engagement as viewers are able to communicate back to the presenters in real time while social distancing. So should you require a small personal event or business level webcast, please go to streamgates.com.au or you can find them on Instagram. Well, boys, the big news of the weekend in the A-League is that Grant Brebner has been relieved of his duties at Melbourne Victory by mutual consent. After the 7-0 shellacking at the hands of City in the derby, I guess the boards didn't have too much choice on the back of that result. But what of their responsibility, Maury?
Yeah, it's, I mean, look, unfortunately for Grant Brebner, on the back of the second extremely heavy defeat against your rivals, it didn't leave the club much choice but to come to the decision that they have done. But I guess the question that you ask in terms of what is, you know, their responsibility in this process, Simon, clearly since Kevin Musker has left the football club, there's been a huge gap I think even speaking to Muskie, that the club seems to have lost its soul a little bit. People that were really heavily invested to Melbourne Victory for many, many years. There's been a lot of changes. Unfortunately, the decisions in the last two appointments, coaches-wise, has not worked out. And when you're such a, you know, such a big football club like Melbourne Victory, who were really the leaders in Australia, then I can understand the concerns for everybody involved, and how important it is that this next coaching choice is 100% correct.
Spider, that leads me on to you. Obviously, you're pretty close with Tony Popovich. He is the name that's being mentioned. To be fair, Ufuk Tale has been mentioned as well, but you'd imagine that Tony Popovich would be pretty high on Victory's list. Is it a job that he would be interested in?
Look, a club the size of Victory, I think anyone would be interested in. That's for sure. I think if that's the case and they really do want Popper, then it's the right coach to go after. I guess it'll all come down to whether Popper wants to take the job and whether he can get what he wants to rebuild the club, because he's the right man to rebuild the club. And like Maury just said, they need to get it right, because it really is important for Australian football. Melbourne Victory is an important club and they need to be up the top, not down the bottom.
And Spides, I mean, I don't know whether you will agree. I'm pretty sure you will agree with me here. There's, for me, there's only three candidates for Melbourne Victory if you're talking Australian. Popovich, Ufi, as we've discussed. And I still can't believe for the life of me how John Aloisi has not been or had another opportunity to get back involved in the game. Strong football club needs a strong character. And that strong character, you know, these three people are very, very strong characters, and make sure that people stay in their lanes. Very, very important for a football club.
Yeah. What do you mean by that, Maury?
Mate, well, it's like your experience needs to stick to the experience that you have. When all of a sudden you have people that start to cross over lanes and start to want to influence or make decisions on things that they do not have the experience or knowledge of, then you
and
have...
And you think that's happening at Victory?
I think it's happened at Melbourne Victory, yes.
Interesting. It is the fifth time this season they've copped four or more goals. They've conceded 42 in total, 13 of them, of course, without reply against Melbourne City. We should give City some credit, Spider. They were very, very good. Jamie McLaren, 5 goals in the game, only the second A-League player after Archie Thompson to achieve that. And, of course, they're now top of the league, starting to sort of fulfill all your predictions at the start of the campaign.
Yeah, they're playing good football. And like we've said early on, mate, they're a very good side. They've got a very good squad. And what I like is that the manager, again, Paddy Cosnorbo, has just kept things running smoothly. Even when things weren't going great, he believed in the style of football, and their style of football is fantastic. They create so many chances, and their attack, like Jamie McLaren's a gun for the A-League. Like, seriously, guys, he's a very good player. Put Naboo in with him and then put Noon on the other side, and the youngsters that Paddy brings on in the last 15, 20 minutes to run raucous, I mean, they're a handful.
Run raucous. But hey, no, you're right, Spide. Mate, Macca is incredible in the A-League. I mean, 5 goals, an unbelievable achievement. Some really fantastic finishes, you know, in that match. We can't get away from the fact that Traore sending off played a huge part in this match. Obviously, a blew out late on. But you're right, Macca, in the form that he's in, Melbourne City are looking very, very good. And Naboo is really bringing some great energy as well. And I think we touched on it a few weeks ago. Naboo, Macca and Noon, they're the best three in the country at the moment. And we're seeing it week in, week out now, which is great for Melbourne City.
Terrific goal that Andrew Naboo scored as well, even if he did admit in the post-game interview that it was a fluke and was intended as
I'm glad he admitted it. It was definitely a fluke, but mate, any goal is a good goal.
Absolutely. Central Coast Mariners, excuse me, couldn't find a goal, going down 1-0 to Western United, which means that City are top of the pile. But the big news out of Gosford, Spider, is the sale of Alokuo, which has been confirmed this week. He's going to join Stuttgart as of next season. Is that the right move for him?
Oh, look, it's a great signing for the boy. I think we've had a lot of success with players going to Germany. I'm just a little bit weary. And is he not quite ready for that level yet? Because it's a very physical league. And that's my only concern. But I'm sure once he gets over there, they'll place him in the right direction, even if he goes on loan to a second division side. Do I think he's ready for the Bundesliga quite yet? Maybe not quite yet. But he'll need time to find his feet more, you know?
Yeah, you know, he will do. And I'm pretty sure this will be the work of John Grimaud. I'm pretty sure the agent that's had a lot of success in players, Australian players that have gone to Germany. So again, Spider, it's not necessarily about the move, although that's a fantastic opportunity for the player. But it's still, you're right, trying to find the right opportunity and the ongoing development in Germany so that they can progress as a footballer. But it's a wonderful opportunity for the lad. And like I says, I think it's coming from a partnership, Simon, that has been successful with previous players. So hopefully this can be just as successful as the previous players before him.
And the other thing I like about this move from the club's point of view is that they get a 6-figure fee. They've not revealed the exact number, but they get some money. I think there might be sell-on clauses as well, you know, assuming that Alu does well and moves on to bigger and even better things. So I think it's a win all round, really, for the player and for the clubs. That's the way that transfer business should be conducted, in my opinion. What about this story? And we didn't have time to cover it last week because it hadn't actually come out yet in the Australian press, that Manchester United are allegedly looking to buy the Central Coast Mariners and move them out of Gosford and to North Sydney. Now, not quite sure how much truth there is in this story that United are almost over the line, but clearly a conversation has been had. On the surface, I think it's exciting, but for me, moving clubs around the country, particularly out of Gosford when they've got an identity there, that's a no straight off for me. I don't know if you agree, guys.
Mate, for me, it's simple. Someone wants to buy Central Coast Mariners, buy them. Fantastic. Invest in them. Keep building the club. Keep bringing through the juniors, but leave it in Gosford. Full stop.
Correct. No arguments with that.
I agree. I agree with the 2 years. So I think we covered off on that one. Great to see someone like Manchester United, and would love to see them invest in the game in Australia. But if it's the Mariners, it's got to be in Gosford.
Okay. Western United taking a couple of games to Tasmania. These, talking of clubs moving around. They got the 1-0 win over the Mariners, as mentioned. Brisbane Roar, your old club, Maury, defeating Western Sydney Wanderers by 2-1. Wanderers now 5 without a win, although 3 of those, to be fair, have been draws. What's going on with the Wanderers at the moment?
Well, they're not firing the way that I guess Carl Robinson would like. They have a very good squad on paper, but as we know, football matches are not won on paper. So I think he's come out openly, you know, in terms of the result, after the result, saying that, you know, the team hasn't made the finals series in the last couple of seasons, but it's the expectation, certainly this season. But they're playing catch up against Spider, with a squad that really should be in the finals, let's be honest.
Personally, I think the squad is quite thin, Maury, to be honest. I think it's a little bit unbalanced. I think defensively they got frailties, which is causing them a problem. When you concede a goal a game, it means you need to score two. And it's very difficult to constantly score two goals or three goals in a game to win. Up front, they got firepower. But, yeah, they're not quite there yet. They're huffing and puffing. Their games are entertaining. I'll give them that much. But is it a squad that can win the title this year? No. I'll tell you what they have to do is they have to make the top six minimum. They should be in the top four. You know, this is the thing that bugs me in Australia. You know, we talk about it's a 12-team competition and we're talking about, oh, we just want to make the top six. Man, you want to win the bloody thing, not make the top six.
Well, Sydney FC have won the bloody thing for the last two seasons, but could not see off Adelaide United. The Reds coming from 2 goals down. Tommy Juric scoring again. He's had a good return to the team after injury. Bobo with both goals for Sydney FC. Ryan Grant sent off in stoppage time. Maury, you got a concern for Sydney FC at the moment. They don't quite look to be as invincible as they've been in recent seasons. Recent years, 2-0 up, that would have been game over. But there's just a little bit of vulnerability about the champions at the moment.
Yeah, you look at probably just at the last couple of games. It's just that game management, you know, something that Sydney have always been very, very good at. And as you touch on, if, you know, 2-0 up against Adelaide, you'd like to think that it was job done. But Adelaide found a way, to get back into the match. I felt it was quite an entertaining game. Sydney, you know, exposed it was a high back line. Adelaide not having good pressure on the ball. And Sydney got in behind them so many times, but they never put the game to bed. So certainly something that Steve Corica will be looking at, because that's the last couple of games, you know, where you've been in a winning position and unfortunately not going on with the job.
Yep. Had the same problem, of course, against Melbourne City. Jamie McLaren with that 98th minute penalty equaliser. Also a draw between MacArthur and Newcastle, also 2-2. Stunning goal from Stephen Ugarkovic and a debut goal for Charles Mombwa, another of the African diaspora. Spider Wellington taking all 3 points in Perth, and the Phoenix are now close to within 4 points of the final spots. Could Ufi Tale do it again despite all the problems he's had this season?
I think they play. I tell you, I like the way Wellington play. They've got a good brand of football. They had a really slow start to the season. They're playing catch up now, but you know what? The competition's so tight that anyone who can go on a 3-4 run winning spree, you know, you can leapfrog a lot of teams, and that's what Wellington have done now. On the other hand, Perth will be worried. I called it early before the season even started. I thought they would struggle, and you know what? They're second or third last. They're somewhere down the bottom. And all the firepower that they got, Maury, up front, mate, you got to build the foundations from the defence, mate. They leak goals for fun.
And you're right. I'm glad you touched on that, Spides, because, again, we're talking about, you know, Western Sydney Wanderers potentially underachieving this season. Well, Perth, oh, my God. I mean, the position that they find themselves in with the players that they have, Richard Garcia, I know he's a new coach and all that sort of stuff, but I've not really heard too many comments about Perth Glory. But the situation and their positioning in the league, for me, is a massive underachievement on what they've got in terms of their squad. I know they've got an aging squad, Spides, and they've had some luck with or bad luck with injuries, but they should be doing better.
They've got certainly, as you mentioned, Spider, plenty of firepower up top, but yeah, you've got to keep them out at the other end. Talking of new coaches, Tony Gustafsson, what a start to life for him as Matilda's coach. We touched last week on the 5-2 loss by Germany. Our podcast was recorded before the second game, the friendly against the Netherlands. And if anything, that was even worse. They got smashed 5-0. Are there major concerns for the girls ahead of the Tokyo Olympics? And just as an aside, I'm not sure a lot of people have picked up on this, but the last time we had back-to-back bad results like that for a national team was Holger Osik back in 2013. Now, he paid with his job. I'm not saying that should happen to Tony Gustafsson. Goodness me, he's only just taken over. But those two results, I think, have set a few tongues wagging.
I think it's woken everyone up to show that we're not as high up as we think we are.
Yeah, and I agree, Spides. Like I said, I mean, I think I touched on, I'm not sure whether it was on the podcast or whether we were off air, about, you know, the two heavy results that you mentioned for Osiak. And of course, it's not going to cost Gustafsson his job because he's just in. But they're two really tough results to take at this period of time when a potential medalist hope we were going in as, and that was the chit-chat around the Tokyo Olympics and obviously with the Women's World Cup. What it clearly shows is that, yes, we have some top talent, but there certainly needs to be some regeneration within this squad. And the importance of a W League that has the right amount of games for our girls to continually develop and hopefully push into this Matilda squad is so important for the future of the women's game.
We seem to have been talking about an expanded W League for so many years, don't we? Talking of that next generation, good to see debuts at least for BT Goad and India Page Wrighty, Alex Hoon and Dylan Holmes. That's part of Tony Gustafsson's job. In terms of the Olympics, the draws for the pots this week were done. Matilda's into pot three, along with Canada and China. They will draw one of three teams in pot one, Japan, the USA or the Netherlands. It was not an easy game in that little lot. And from pot two, one of Sweden, Great Britain or Brazil. So it's going to be tough for them, isn't it? Very tough.
Yeah, very tough. But, you know, it's all about preparing the girls for these tournaments. We got to do the best we can to prepare them for these tournaments and even support the coaching staff. They need camps. They need time together. Like, you know, we talk about the quality girls that we have that are playing for clubs all over the place. But Maury, it's a big difference when you come and play for your national team. You need time to gel to a system. And, you know, the new coach has come in now, Gustafsson, and you know, he's got his work cut out, that's for sure.
The Oli Roos, meantime, have been put into pot four for Tokyo, along with Saudi Arabia, France, and Romania. Now I did a little permutations here. Here's the best-case scenario. They could get Japan, Honduras, and South Africa. I think that would be okay. The worst-case scenario, Argentina or Brazil, Germany, and potentially New Zealand, which, I mean, that can go either way, can't it, when you play sort of a local derby. So let's hope it's the latter. All right, boys, thanks for the moment. We're going to head overseas. London calling.
London calling.
Go further with the Australian College of Physical Education. With more than 100 years of experience, ACPE's courses are designed to get you career ready. Their bachelor degrees in sports performance and business, health science, applied fitness, education and dance can help turn your dream into a career. Find out where ACPE can take you. Apply online today for Semester 1, 2021 at acpe.edu.au.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Say you. So the quadruple dream is over. Manchester City beaten by Chelsea in the FA Cup semi-finals. Yes, my chin's on the floor this morning. But in fairness, Maury, City were pretty underwhelming in that semi-final. And what on earth has happened to Raheem Sterling?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, look, it's just hard when you can be the best club in your country and the best squad, and sometimes when you're just not getting that regular game time. I mean, he's not played a lot of football. I think the last 7-8 games he's not started. So we know what it's like when you come in as a player on the back of very little time. Confidence might be a little bit low. You overthink things. But Raheem Sterling's a quality player. I tell you what, but I mean, Chelsea and Tuchel and the job that he's done there. I mean, Man City didn't really create anything clear cut. And I actually felt that Chelsea, Simon, I know you're going to hate to hear it, but I felt that they were really, really comfortable with that victory last night.
No, they were. There's no doubt about that. Fully deserving their place in the final. And I think Chelsea will emerge over the next 12 months as the biggest threat to Manchester City in terms of domestic domination, if you want to put it that way. A further concern for Pep Guardiola, an injury to Kevin De Bruyne, which could keep him out of the Carabao Cup final next week. And just on Guardiola, Spider, he's getting a bit of stick for making the big changes for the semi-final. Now, in fairness, he only had 2.5 days to prepare for it. They got through their Champions League quarterfinal tie against Borussia Dortmund. He went with Zach Steffen in goal, who was probably at least partially to blame for the goal. And I think maybe of more concern with that semi-final in the Champions League to come against PSG. City showing signs that they are still, on the odd occasion, vulnerable to the counter-attack. Now, Paris Saint-Germain have got a front three of Mbappe, Di Maria and Neymar. They will take full advantage if there is a weakness there.
Yeah, look, bagging Pep, it's a very difficult one for all managers because what they're trying to do is get the freshest team they can on the park without getting injuries. I mean, we know what kind of games Man City's got coming up now. The Champions League would be high on their priority list. They've basically won the EPL again. So I think all eyes will be on that trophy. Losing in the FFA Cup, yeah, it'd be disappointing for him, but he has to rotate his players. I mean, De Bruyne's injured again. He was out just recently for about 4 weeks as well. So, you know, you need your best players on the park in the big matches. And, you know, I feel for Man City. I feel for all these teams who play all these games in such short times, but the managers have got to make these decisions.
That's right. And he's certainly got a big enough squad to choose from. We'll return to the Premier League title race in a moment. Before that, the other semi-final, Maury. Leicester City through to face Chelsea at Wembley. They saw off Southampton by the only goal. Kelechi Iheanacho yet again in the FA Cup. Goodness me, he's had a heck of a run in this competition. And I think that's probably fitting reward for a fine season for Brendan Rodgers and his squad.
Yeah, no, Elliot, look, I mean, Brendan Rodgers, again, probably, doesn't get the credit for the job that I think he's done at Leicester. I mean, you know, he's up there competing with the big boys that are spending far more money. His teams always play a really proactive style of football. He's developed some players and brought them onto the next level. Iheanacho, by the way, what about the run that he's having just now? That's an incredible run. So for Brendan Rodgers and Leicester to reach the final, I think it's a great achievement. Can they go on and win it? Yeah, I mean, that's now the next challenge for him. But he certainly had a fantastic season. I think Leicester have been good value this season.
It's their first FA Cup final since 1969, Leicester City. The fifth time they've been in the final. And they've never won it yet. We'll see if that changes against Chelsea. We said we'd return to the title race, Spider. You said City have won the Premier League. Have they? Manchester United defeating Burnley by 3-1. The gap is down to 8 points, 6 games to go. Now, I remember back in 2012, United were 8 points ahead of City, and City came back and stole it on the final day. Could something similar happen?
Well, look, we're talking about two teams. One team's red hot, Man United. They are scarily hot at the moment, playing some really good football. But Man City's squad's deep enough to win the games that they have to win. They've got 8 points clear, 6 games to go. I know they've got the Champions League. Their minds will be on that, but their squad's deep enough, Simon. Even though Man United, I mean, you know what? They're playing some really good stuff as well. But I just think they're too far behind.
Man United, if every single game between now and the end of the season is away from home, they've got a chance.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. They are near invincible on the road. At the other end of the table, Sheffield United relegated after the loss at Wolves. Newcastle's form has been terrific. Your old club, Maury, in recent weeks. Yep. The return of Alan Saint-Maximin, maybe the catalyst. Terrific win against West Ham. Fulham did get a point against Arsenal, which just keeps them in touch. But
man, they were unlucky, well, Simon.
They were unlucky.
Yeah.
Offside. I mean, the goal was it's a VAR again, isn't it, Spy? It's a boy that scores is not offside, but there's somebody standing in an offside position that probably blocks the sighting of the goalkeeper.
Yeah, and Matty Ryan gets a flick on as an assist.
Yeah,
Matty Ryan flicks it on and gets an assist. It's good to see him on the park for Arsenal, actually.
Absolutely. Great to see him on the park. Norwich City have been promoted after one season out of the top flight. Congratulations to Daniel Fark, who's done a great job at Carrow Road to get them back up. Heading out of the Premier League, Maury, Barcelona won their first trophy under Ronald Koeman. A great goal again from Leo Messi. Terrific team goal. He was outstanding in their Copa del Rey final win over Athletic Bilbao.
Yeah, and look, I mean, a club like Barcelona, Ronald Koeman knows the pressures and what needs to happen at that football club, and it's winning trophies. And who knows how to win trophies better than Messi? You know, again to score in an important match to lift a trophy for Barcelona. So good news, and also a really exciting end to the La Liga as well. You know, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid. It's close up the top there. So it's still interesting.
Real dropped points tonight, Maury.
There you go.
And Atletico won 5-0. To be fair, Atletico bashed them. They played Elche. But Real dropped points. But I don't know why I've got this gut feeling that Barca's still going to win the title. I don't know why. I have no idea.
You think it's written in the stars, do you?
I don't know. They haven't been great all year. You know, they had a 2 month patch with old yucky poo, and they've just come good at the right time. And Atletico didn't get that far away from them, and Barca can still see them. They're in their sights, and that sort of worries me.
You do love that yucky poo line, don't you? What about Hansi Flick, who's told Bayern he's leaving? He's only won 6 trophies in his 12 months in charge. But he wants to go. There is a rumour that he might take over from Joachim Löw as the German national team coach, of course, which would be fair enough. But underneath the surface, Maury, there's this rumour of discontent with the relationship with Hasan Salihamidzic, former player, of course, of some repute, his sporting director. And his CEO is none other than Oliver Kahn. Imagine working for those two and being subservient to two such great players.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I played against both of them, actually, in the Champions League when, unfortunately, we went out. But two very, very strong characters, especially Oli Kahn. Very, very strong character. They're Bayern Munich, but they always seem to find the right person, the way to continue to be successful. Hansi Flick, obviously, mate, he's stock sky high, Simon, isn't it? I mean, we know that Yogi Löw's for some time has announced that he would be leaving. You know, so Bayern Munich, who would be the next manager of that club? Who knows? It's only going to be the best, but they'll continue to be successful. And you've got good football people there in the sporting director and the CEO that certainly know what it takes to be successful on the field.
I've got to tell you very quickly my great Oliver Kahn story. 2002, I was at the World Player Awards in Madrid. I think Oli Kahn got third or second that particular year. And you know what he looks like, Oliver Kahn. He's very very stern looking.
Stern,
and
very
I approached him for an interview. I said, excuse me, Mr. Khan, would you mind doing an interview for SBS? Because I was doing it for SBS in those days. And he said in very barking terms, I don't speak English. And I thought, well, you just did. So thinking on my feet, because I speak a bit of German, so I said, wir können in Deutsch sprechen. And he just looked at me and went, nein. And that was it. That was it. Final one on a much more serious note. Now, the Champions League changes, this expansion to a 10-team group stage, this big Swiss system, Super League, was expected to be ratified on Monday. But news out of the UK overnight is that the big six clubs of England have signed up to a European Super League, or at least the concept of it, which I think is going to provoke outrage right around Europe, maybe not around the rest of the world, I don't know. But if this Super League goes through, we are going to see a fundamental change in football that may well be irreversible. And I don't think it's a good thing. That's my personal view, but I'm fascinated to hear yours, Maureen Spider.
You're right, Simon. And by the way, I've got the television on the background, but I've got it on mute. European clubs announced new Super League, breaking news. So there's obviously information coming out as we're live on this podcast in terms of what that will look like. But for me, it's greed. It's greed. It is absolute greed. There is a hundred odd years of culture, of history. And for me, you're going to lose all of that. You really are. The Premier League is a fantastic competition. The Champions League is a fantastic competition. And then all of a sudden now we want these top six. So let me tell you, Man United not even in the Champions League. Arsenal are a million miles from Champions League. Yet they feel that they have a divine right to be in a Super League with no relegation and to have the commercial opportunities that are limitless. For me, I think it's crazy. I think we cannot and we must protect the game and continue to protect the future of the game, the fans, the clubs. I don't think this can happen. And I hopefully think that there's going to be a strong enough case against it, why it cannot happen. If there is a breakaway, Simon, that they're saying that players won't be able to represent their countries. So a lot of these kind of things, I hope, detract from this new Super League taking place.
Spider.
Mate, I got nothing more to say. He said everything perfectly. Mate, it is absolute craziness. It's killing football. It's killing football. The small clubs are just going to die away, and the big club, mate, it's like life in general. The rich get richer and the poor just die away. And that's what's happening in football now.
What's your thoughts, Simon?
Well, as I said, I agree with everything that you've said. I think it's going to create a two-tier system. I mean, we virtually have one as it is with the money available in the current Champions League. They wanted to expand that. I wonder whether this might be a tactic because they've not quite got what they want, either in terms of money or, more likely, control of this new Champions League. And this is going to be a stick to beat UEFA and the other clubs with. Fascinating that the European Clubs Association, which represent all of the clubs around Europe, actually came out with a statement against this new Super League and seemingly went against their own chairman, Andrea Agnelli, who's one of the main catalysts for it, of course, the Juventus guy. I hope it doesn't go through. But even if it doesn't, it seems as though, you know, we are stuck with a bare minimum of an expanded Champions League, which again is going to change the face of football across Europe. I certainly think it will mean the end of competitions like the League Cup in England. I think that will have to go because there simply won't be enough room on the calendar for it. Maybe even at some point in the future, we'll see, you know, the end of the FA Cup. And to me, that would be a tragedy. A competition going back, you know, to 1872. But it seems that, tradition means little to these big clubs at the moment. And I'm disappointed and saddened that, you know, my own club is one of the signatories to it. But, you know, can't say I'm surprised by that. At the end of the day, it all comes down to money, doesn't it? And this constant grasping for it. And Spider's absolutely right. The teams at the bottom are going to be the ones that suffer. And to do this in the middle of a global pandemic as well, yes, speaks yes. volumes for me that there is very little care and attention being paid to the plight, not only the smaller clubs, but to supporters, many of whom might have lost their jobs, you know, during this pandemic, and are struggling to afford to, you know, support their team or indulge in their favourite pastime. Anyway, no doubt this time next week, we will know a lot more on the Super League or the expanded Champions League. Thanks very much, guys, for the moment. Let's get into our final segment. And we got a great overseas guest awaiting us in Footballers' Lives.
Footballers' Lives.
Well, our guest today was born in Aberdeen in 1993 and started his career with Montrose before switching to Dundee in 2012. In 2015, he made the switch to Hibernian, where he's remained. And although he played for the Scotland junior teams, he became a Socceroo in 2018 due to his Sydney-born father. Hibs are currently third in the Scottish Premier League, and our guest is second top scorer with 11 goals. It is a big podcast welcome to Martin Boyle. How are you, Martin?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
No, it's great to have you with us. First up, the Scottish Cup tie against Stranraer that you played only a few hours ago. A good win and another couple of goals for you, having a fine season.
Yeah, just gone back. That's probably the best intro I've ever had. Thank you very much.
Hey, hang on. Who's on the show for the interpretating? Maury or Matt? Because I'm not going to understand anything.
Sorry, guys. I'll try to slow down.
No, you're all good. You're all good. A couple of goals for you against Stranraer. So that puts you through to a tie with Motherwell. Is that correct?
Yeah, quarterfinals on Saturday. Looking at today, it could have been one of those games where it was a potential banana skin, but you know we were professional enough and stuck to the game plan, and you know we moved the ball well, and you know we took our chances.
This competition, I know, was Hibs's sort of holy grail, wasn't it? Until you finally won it again in 2016, the first time in 114 years you'd won the trophy. Can you go all the way this season?
Well, I think everyone that enters it would like to think that they've got a chance of winning it. Obviously, being there, done it before, it would be very nice to do it again. Everyone wants a bit of silverware. But we obviously know that it's not easy. It's not going to be handed to us. We have to earn the right. And we have to go again on Saturday against Motherwell, another tough tie. But if you come through that, then you never know. We can start to believe, and hopefully we can maybe get our hands on it again.
Martin, as a player, I've got to ask, like, so when you see Rangers and Celtic drawn in a fourth round, obviously Rangers go through today, but you see an opportunity if you can, you know, progress in the competition that one of the bigger teams are out. Does that feel as if there's more of an opportunity? Do players think of that?
We personally haven't thought of it. Obviously, we look at the tie and we think, well, you know, it's a great tie. You know, so we'll be keeping eyes on that. But like you say, whoever progresses from that is likely going to be the favourites to lift the cup, in all honesty. Two top teams, and the way Rangers are playing at the moment, you know, unbeaten in the league and they're already champs, you'd probably like to think that they're favourites at the moment. But I think if we can maybe go under the radar, quietly do our thing and, you know, hopefully cause a few upsets along the way.
Martin, you were an unused sub in the final against Rangers back in 2016. You won 3-2 that day. What do you remember of that particular afternoon? That must have been something a bit special.
Yeah, I don't remember much. I remember the party, which was a bit silly at the end, but I think it was just the atmosphere, taking in the atmosphere. And obviously the way it happened in the last minute. You know, the captain going up, scoring, and the fans on the pitch and all that. It was really special. And, you know, we had a bus parade where there was like 250,000 people in the middle of Edinburgh. It was special. And I mean, you know, just your family's been there and been really proud of you and what you've obviously achieved. Obviously, not getting onto the pitch was slightly disappointing, but at the end of the day, I had a medal and I'm really proud of that. And I think throughout the tournament, I can look back and say that I did, you know, I participated in, you know, getting there.
It might be a bit different, of course, if you do get there this year, because there'll be no fans, or at least there aren't at the moment. Just give us an insight into playing as a professional at the moment when there's nobody in the stands. Is it strange? Does it feel like you're playing a training session, or is it a case of when you get over the white line, it's all the same?
Yeah, it's obviously different. I think now that we're almost at the end of the season, it's kind of at the back of your mind. I think at the start of the season, prime examples, the fake crowd noises coming through the tannoys at Easter Road, and I'd already scored and I'm running back to halfway line and it was delayed and then they started cheating again. So it was, you know, it was kind of unsync and it was weird, but at the same time, it seems to be working for us at the moment. obviously we'd love the fans there to be sharing the good season that we're having. But at the same time, I think it's just the atmosphere that you miss, you know, and scoring goals and celebrating in front of fans. And maybe it might be affecting some players' performances this year, in terms of getting that them behind you, or maybe some players are playing even better because there's no fans getting on the back. It might sound kind of weird, but it might be working like that. And obviously we've a few young guys in our team that, you know, the young left back breaking through at the moment, Josh Doig, has been fantastic. He hasn't played in front of a fan yet. So he's having a remarkable season, but you know, we always wind them up. We're like, are you even any good? Can you play in front of fans and that? So so we just wind them up. But like you're saying, it'd be a complete, I imagine it'd be a complete shock to them when, you know, the fans come back.
Yeah, it can work both ways, can't it, I guess. This has been by far your best season in terms of a goal return since you were playing in the second division, as mentioned at the outset, with Montrose. Why has it all come together for you this season, do you think?
I think I'm just getting more freedom, whether I'm right wing back or playing up front. I'm just getting a bit more freedom, and you know, they're trying to get me in the ball as much as possible, isolating, you know, 1v1s, and try and be as positive as I can and get my shots away. So yeah, obviously I think everyone's just starting to click into place. I'd probably say I'm a bit more experienced, and I think probably what helped me a lot was being injured for 11 months, kind of spurred me on a little bit of lost time and maybe learning more about the game and positions I can take up, whether when I wasn't injured, you know, maybe I was a bit of a headless chicken running about the pitch. But I think I've learned a bit more about the game, and, you know, maybe even if it's walking into the park a couple of yards and picking up that dangerous space where I can collect the ball, and, you know, it seems to be working. Obviously, I'm on penalties, which is a boost.
That helps the numbers.
Absolutely. I mean, I've missed one, but I've still scored five. So
yeah.
I think my next one, the boys will be pressuring me.
You touch on that, Martin, in terms of you had that period where you were out injured, and as a footballer, you need a lot of luck, eh? I mean, in terms of staying fit and healthy, and this has been a wonderful season for you for staying fit and healthy, and obviously confidence grows, you know, with being able to back up. Jack Ross also, you know, how much of a role has he played? He's obviously got a great reputation as a young up-and-coming manager. He seems to be doing a wonderful job there. You must be enjoying your time under him.
Yeah, he's been absolutely brilliant since he walked in the door. He obviously came in as I was coming back from injury, which maybe gave him a little bit of a boost. It certainly gave me a boost because I felt like a new player and I had a lot to offer. So yeah, he's been brilliant straight away. And, you know, he's always said, try to get that numbers up, try to get as much goals and assists as you can. And that's, you know, that's what I've done. And multiple times I've sat me down through the week and, you know, we've just chat. He's a great man manager, and he's had a fantastic season with Hibs at the moment. So hopefully he can stick around if there's anyone sniffing.
Martin, you've also become a bit of a marked man. I know you've been fouled more than any other player in the Scottish Premier League, according to the stats. Now, I do have to ask you this. This has led to a couple of accusations of diving. And I want to read this quote out. John Hughes of Ross County, when you played them recently, said of you, "The last time I saw a dive like that, the boy had Speedos on." Is that a little bit unfair?
To be fair, I laugh it off. I mean, I remember getting on the bus after the game. We've just won. And I'm looking at my phone, I'm getting tagged and all this. And you've got to laugh. I mean, I remember speaking about it a few days ago in the media. And it's some things managers say is bizarre. I mean, it was a clear penalty at the end of the day. And yeah, obviously, he was a bit frustrated. But at the end of the day, he was obviously not happy at the point. And, you know, sometimes when they say stuff like that, it gets a big reaction. And, you know, some people think it's funny and stuff like that. But obviously, at the same time, it could probably have an effect on me where referees might be seeing things different and actually thinking, well, is he actually getting tackled, or is he going down soft? And I always say maybe the way I shift the ball and the way I move and the speed I move is, it could be quite tough. I mean, I'm only 68 kg. When there's big boys throwing me about, it can be quite tough at times. So sometimes it is hard to stay in feet, but You always see players as soon as there's contact, and that's it. You go down, and you know, some people get away with it, some people don't.
And you're right. And John Hughes, Yogi, as they call him here, boys in Scotland, he's a bit of a character, eh? So he doesn't mind coming out with the odd bit that you know, the media have a little bit of fun with. And it was funny because I'd done the Rangers Hibs game last weekend, obviously that Martin was involved in, and he picked up a yellow card in that game. And to be honest with you, the referee for me had an absolute nightmare, because again, Martin, you were travelling at speed, you shifted the ball well. There was contact. He wasn't searching for a penalty as such, and the referee, you know, booked Martin, which for me was totally wrong. So, as he's touched on there, sometimes you do, you know, referees and other people read these kind of comments, and it can sometimes hamper you in future games as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So going back to his comments, there might be referees meetings where instances like that do happen, and obviously I've ran into the box at speed, and I've ran into 2 6-foot-3 guys, and I've fell over, not thinking anything of it, not claiming for a penalty. By the time I get to my feet, it's a yellow card in my face. Yeah. Then I'm at risk for the rest of the game, which obviously I can't say I've had much red cards, but you know, it could just take a slip or something accidental happening, or so something like that could happen, but. Yeah, obviously, it plays a big part of the game.
Maury, can I just confirm something here, that you defended an attacker over a defender there? Can we just place that on record?
I did, and I was working for Rangers too. I was doing it with Alan Hutton, Martin. You'll know Alan Hutton. And to be fair, me and Hutz were like, there's no way that that's a yellow card, because there was contact. You've gone to ground. You weren't even looking for a free kick or a penalty. He was just looking to get up, and next minute he's got a yellow card in his face. So it was very, very harsh.
It could be time to start wearing the Speedos on the outside of the shorts.
Well, it was a great game of football. It was an entertaining game. And then I'm doing media after the game, and apparently that was a talking point where I thought nothing was coming of it, and nobody else thought anything was coming of it. I just don't see why it was a talking point.
Those Aussie links, they run deep with Maury, you see, even when it comes to attackers and defenders, which leads us nicely on to Australia, and the fact that, of course, despite your accent, you are a fully fledged Socceroo, thanks to your dad, who was born in Sydney. Tell us a little bit about your dad, if you're willing to. Did you grow up with that sort of Aussie culture around you, or not really?
Not really, no. He's obviously, my gran and all that lived over there, and you know, obviously he was born over there, and I think he moved back when he was around 15 years old, back to Scotland, where originally my great-grandfather and mother were born. So I think the idea was always to come back, so they've obviously moved over, and you know, they've probably enjoyed a bit of time over there, and they've moved back, and out comes me, and you know, I'm fully Scottish, and But growing up, it was, I think it was when I was playing at Montrose, we always had the idea, like we knew that I could represent Australia, but it was how do we do it? It was, that was the key. It was like, oh, do we do we email someone or do we pick up the phone or like how do you let people know if you know, what I mean?
Know
like it's yeah like it's it can be it was strange and obviously Jamie McLaren and Mark Milligan signing for Hibs kind of you know it passed away and you know thankfully it worked out that way.
It was as simple as that, was it? It was a conversation with Jamie McLaren and Mark Milligan.
Yeah, because obviously when Jamie first signed and all the boys were winding him up saying that I could represent Australia and he was just laughing off saying, yeah, good one. Fully Scottish guy, he's having us on. But yeah, I mean, little talk like that goes a long way. And obviously Mark Milligan coming in after the World Cup for us and, you know, he was obviously the captain and, you know, Graham Arnold flew over to watch a training session and talks got going and he obviously watched the game and liked what he's seen.
You've said a couple of times, and I know you've said it in jest, but, you know, this fully Scottish guy playing for Australia. When you made your debut against South Korea at Suncorp in Brisbane, had you actually ever been to Australia before?
No, so all the media was building up to that. Obviously, I first stepped in to Australia for the first time, which I was more nervous for the media rather than the games, which was strange. I took the questions with a pinch of salt. It was probably like joining a new team where you knew you had to maybe impress or that was it. I mean, what Graham Arnold done and the Federation done is took a massive, you know, I wouldn't say, well, maybe a gamble in terms of seeing what I was capable of. And thankfully, you know, I played a part in two games and, you know, it worked out brilliantly. And thankfully, the guys over there, you know, took a shine to me, hopefully. But yeah, it's crazy how it worked out and I have no regrets. I'm very proud of what I've done. And even if the two games were the games and they were like, well, you know what, we haven't seen enough, I'd still be very proud in what I achieved.
Look, you've got a future with the Socceroos, mate. That goes without saying. But mate, interesting. So your first time in Australia, Suncorp Stadium. It's a stadium that I know very, very well. But what was your thoughts of Australia? I mean, because that's a wonderful stadium. It's a great football stadium. Conditions. When was the game? Was it in the hot months?
It's always hot in Brisbane.
I think
isn't it
was November. I think it was November.
November. So how did you?
I think
find
it was the last camp. Yeah, it was the last camp for the Asia Cup. It was fantastic. I mean, the flight was long. I could say that. It was slightly jet lagged, but it was brilliant. Obviously, traveling with Milligan was a pinch of salt. It was brilliant, and obviously getting there and having to sing the national anthem for your initiation was tough, but it was good. You know, it kind of made me feel at home and it kind of made me feel welcome. But in terms of entering the country for the first time, it was fantastic. Brisbane was brilliant, lovely place. And I had no idea what the stadium was like, and obviously pulling up to it the day before the game and, you know, just taking it all in, it was brilliant. It was absolutely fantastic. Probably one of the best stadiums I've played in.
What do your family think about your decision, Martin? Were they fully in support of it? Because, of course, you played for the Scotland junior teams as well.
Yeah, they were fully for it. And like you say, there's been not just me in this situation, but there's also been people that have chosen different countries to represent. And, you know, personally for me, I thought it was the best route to go down. And like you say, from speaking to Graham Arnold early on, inviting me along to the first Dubai camp for a week. And I always say it to this day, and I back it, well, I can't back up, but even if I got invited along to the camp and they're like, wait, that's it, then I wouldn't have went back and tried to represent for Scotland. I think that would have been it. I mean, I would have been happy for just getting invited along. And like you say, I'm thankful that it's all worked out.
Of course, You scored twice in your first start against Lebanon, and everything was building up quite nicely for the Asian Cup in 2019. And then you go and suffer that horrendous knee injury against Oman in a warm-up friendly. Is that the biggest disappointment of your career so far, having to miss that tournament?
Yeah, by far, 100%. It's just hard to put in words. It was even the challenge. It wasn't even bad. The guys just accidentally hit my knee, and I've ran it off. And 2 minutes later, I've tried to turn, and I've just heard a little crunch, thinking nothing of it. It was strange because I still had all the movements and the strength in my leg, and they sent me for a scan in Dubai, and got the results a day later, and you know, I just got pulled into the doctor's office, and basically he put his arm around me and he was like, you've got a slight tear in my lateral meniscus, and it's not looking great. So I was like, wow. Obviously looking at it back then, I tried everything to play through it. I was like, look, is it something I can play through? Can I get an injection or just trying everything? To be honest, I didn't really want to head back. And then speaking to Graham Arnold, and you know, it was just devastating because I had about 10 family members flying over to watch the games as I was flying back to get an operation, which wasn't ideal. It would have been the first time my dad would have seen me represent Australia and stuff like that. So yeah, it wasn't nice, but at least they had a good trip out of it. I told them to stay. They didn't want to enjoy it, but I told them to stay and watch the games, and they stayed and watched the three games. You know, they made a bit of a holiday of it. So yeah, it wasn't ideal, but like I say, it's just one of those things that's happened.
It's the life of a footballer, isn't it? Ups and downs throughout all your career. I guess one of the bonuses for you now is that you've got a Socceroos teammate as well. You mentioned Jamie McLaren and Mark Milligan, who you played with, but they've gone. But you've got another one now at Hibernian, Jackson Irvine, and the two of you seem to have an almost instinctive understanding on the pitch, both for club and country.
Yeah, Jacko's a top man. He's been brilliant for us. I think he's brought us onto that next level. He's got a bit of everything. You know, he's good in the air, great energy, big long legs. He's great at passing. So yeah, he's just an all-rounder.
You forgot the mustache.
The mustache.
He's long hair. He's gorgeous long hair. He's wild gear, which is something. So it's quite fascinating seeing him every morning. He's always rocking up in something different, which is good. He's, you know, all the boys buzz off it, which is class. But yeah, he's been fantastic for us, and obviously, I think everyone at the club would like him to stick around. But who knows the way he's playing at the moment. And yeah, since he's came in, we've had a good understanding where, you know, I make those runs, and you know, he's thankfully been able to find me.
I want to ask you, one more before we move on to some Twitter questions to finish, Martin. You're married to a footballer, Rachel Small, who plays, or Rachel Boyle, as she is these days, who plays for Hibs Ladies. Is there any getting away from football in your house? And when Scotland play Australia in any sort of international sport, do you have to put a dividing line on the sofa in the house?
We've got a 2-year-old where we always laugh and joke that I say she'll play for the Matildas, and then that's where she'll butt in and say she's playing for Scotland. So we're not forcing our little one to play football. We can make our own choice, but if it does come down to that, then I'll be pushing towards that. But yeah, look, it's great. Sometimes you can come home and, you know, we can stick on Match of the Day and we can watch it together instead of watching a film, which is great. It's great crap.
Is she your worst critic, Martin? Is she your worst critic?
No, maybe sometimes I'll get that. Should have done better there or something like that. But nah, we honestly take it with a pinch of salt. I mean, if we both get beat on the weekends and we won't talk about it, but if we have positive results, then it's a happy home. But like you say, because we're so into the football and it's all we have. I think our little daughter Amelia, you know, we come home and you know, can take your mind off football, which is great. It's not always football, but you know, we have that to take our minds off it, and which is, yeah, it's been good.
Okay, let's finish off with a few Twitter questions. I'll start with this one, our question of the week. $100 Outback voucher going to Ben B. And Ben asks, would you ever consider playing in the A-League in a few years' time?
I think it's just something that I've always spoke to my wife and, you know, something that I'd always want to do, yeah. I'm not getting any younger, which is another thing. And obviously I've been in Scotland all my life, and obviously I'd like to go over there or somewhere else, perhaps. But at the same time, I've still got 2 years left at Hibs. So who knows? But at the same time, it would always be nice to, even if it was just a season over there, hopefully, well, maybe not near the end of my career. Hopefully I've got a lot to offer if I do go over there. But yeah,
Are you like Maury and struggle with the sun?
Oh, I hate sun. I hate it. I hate sun. Yeah. So,
but I'm just thinking which club in Australia we can send you to.
Wellington. He can go to Wellington in New Zealand.
Do they have aircon in the stadiums by any chance?
Martin, this one from Samuel 82. We sort of touched on this a little bit already, but do you get much criticism from the Scottish sports press for choosing Australia over Scotland? And as a second part to his question, also, how excited are you for the Scots to be participating in the Euros?
I wouldn't say criticism, though. Sometimes it'd be like, have you made the right decision? Probably, maybe because they have done well recently and qualified for the Euros, a major tournament. And then sometimes you'll get people saying, oh, you've missed out and stuff like that. But like I say, I have no regret whatsoever. And I feel like I've made the correct decision. And yeah, I'll be fully supporting them. Obviously, my wife plays for Scotland. And I have family members and I have good friends in the Scotland squad. So I'll be cheering them on.
Okay.
Especially England.
Sorry again, Maury. Go
especially,
on.
Especially against England in the Euros, they got a good group.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, definitely Wembley.
Oh, come on, that's an easy 3 points for us. Ben Archer asks, this is an interesting one. You might not want to answer this one, Martin. I don't know. But he says, any truth in the rumour that you're being linked with an English Premier League team in the Midlands next season? Aston Villa, Wolves or West Brom? Don't know where he's got that from. Any truth in that?
That would be nice, wouldn't it? It would be great. Does he know something I don't know? Is that my agent, by any chance?
I've no idea.
I can't imagine so, no. Like I say, I'm happy doing what I'm doing at the moment. And if there's any speculation, it's speculation. But like I say, it's one of those that I've definitely not heard about. So it's okay. New to me.
Right. A slightly different tact. Lee Broxham Facts asks, I noticed your gaming setup last year. What video games are you playing at the moment?
Yeah, I quite like my game itself. I'm sitting here just now. I play a lot of FIFA, a lot of Call of Duty. Like you say, a lot of footballers have a bit of spare time, and maybe you can obviously link up with friends that are miles away from you. You could probably play anywhere, and you know, it's something I like to do and keeps my mind off everyone else, apart from chasing after a 2-year-old and getting shouted at from the wife.
Okay, two more and then we'll throw to Spiders. Always has the final words, always has the final question. Nick Rojas, what are your thoughts on Vegemite on toast? These are really cerebral questions this week. Sorry about this, Martin.
I had tried it for the first time in Dubai, I think the first camp, and I wasn't a fan because it's like a Marmite, is it?
That's right.
Along that.
No, it's not a Marmite, it's Vegemite, mate. It's, get it right.
It's along the same lines. Some people love it, some people hate it, and I mean, I haven't took to it. Never know, I might, but I'm more of a,
he's
I'm
not,
more of a chocolate
he's not
spread
convinced.
Kind of guy.
He's not convinced.
Oh dear. And the
lads in the squad buzz off it. They think it's the best thing ever. Obviously I tried it and yeah, I wasn't a fan of the taste to start with, but like, you never know. Things change.
I'm with you, Martin. It's garbage. Paul Duncan Paul Duncan asks simply, Rangers or Celtic?
That's such a Scottish question, that.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
No preference, honestly. Yeah. The top teams have achieved a lot. Honestly, it doesn't bother me the slightest.
Very diplomatic, Martin. Right, Spider, over to you. Off you go.
All right. Martin, the fans always want to know the favourite, your best stadium that you've played at and the biggest dungeon you've played at.
Also, the Brisbane stadium was really nice. It was brilliant. Suncorp, yeah. And the Sydney, what was, I'm not familiar with names, but that was
Sydney
that
Olympic
was great.
Park. Yep.
Yeah. And then I've obviously played at Celtic Park and Ibrox as well, which... I think I'm going to go Ibrox on atmosphere. Obviously, I haven't had a taste of a proper full international packed out stadium. But I think in terms of atmosphere and when you enter the stadium and you know, you get that wee bit of, oh, could be spicy today. I'm going to go Ibrox.
And the biggest dungeon?
And the biggest dungeon?
The worst place you've played at.
In Scotland, to be honest, they're not dungeons, but they're obviously part-time teams and stuff like that.
Mate, they're dungeons. There's got to be some dungeons in Scotland, mate. Let me give you the tip.
There's multiple dungeons in Scotland, but they're way down the lower leagues. And I have played at every stadium in Scotland, going way back to my Montrose days. I've visited them all, and yeah, there's a few dungeons. I'm not naming names. I can't.
I don't think Montrose's home ground was that glamorous either, was it, Martin? Is it Lynx Park, Montrose? Is that right?
Lynx Park. That's paradise. AstroTurf, big stand. houses in the background. It's fantastic. I loved it.
Oh, happy days, particularly in the middle of January. Martin, we're going to leave it there. Thanks so much for your time. We wish you all the very best in your quest for that Europa League spot. You're looking pretty good on it at the moment. And hopefully we'll see you playing for the Socceroos in Kuwait in 40-degree heat in June, July. That'll be fun.
I can't wait. It's obviously going to be hot. But like you say, it's going to be the same for every other team. It's just how we adjust to it better. So fingers crossed and get a selection and bring this form in the internationals.
Thanks, Martin. Really appreciate your time today. Very good of you to join us. And good luck, mates. Yeah, we look forward to seeing you in the green and gold again soon.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Cheers.
Thanks, cheers, mate. Cheers.
That's Martin, guys. Boyle, and that is us for another week. Join us again next week for another Shim, Spider, and so much more. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.